Okay, good morning. 9 o'clock on a bright Monday morning in Cheyenne. We're here to start with Office of Administrative Hearings. Welcome. It's good to have you here, and the floor is yours. Identify yourself, and let's get into your budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Deb Baumer. I'm the director of the Office of Administrative Hearings, and with me today is Lynn Krantz. She's the office manager. I've been an attorney for 22 years, but 17 of those years I have been with OAH. I've been the director for 13 years. Lynn has been with OAH for 22 years, the last 13 years as the office manager, and prior to that she was the paralegal for OAH. I would just like to briefly begin by explaining what it is that we do. We conduct contested case hearings statewide in disputes between state government agencies and citizens of Wyoming. And we hear the case where the dispute has occurred, trying to take advantage of video conferencing as much as we can, just to keep our travel costs down. Last year, you know, we hear three main kinds of disputes: workers' compensation issues, driver's license actions, primarily DUI cases, and then what we call all other cases. So that's any other state agency referring a case to us that is not a workers' comp or a DUI. Last year, we handled roughly 1,100 DUI cases, 600 workers' comp cases, and 100 all other cases. Our all other cases include Department of Family Services, child abuse and neglect, welfare entitlement cases, Department of Health matters concerning Medicaid waiver programs, all the licensing boards, including doctors, chiropractors, engineers, geologists, nurses. And then we also hear OSHA cases, industrial siting, retirement. We do all the employee terminations for state employees, and new to our plate, we're doing all the teacher terminations around the state now, too. We issue final decisions in our cases whenever they go to hearing. Those include findings of fact and conclusions of law. They can be anywhere from 15 pages to 70 pages, depending on the complexity of the case. Our hearings last anywhere from 30 minutes for a DUI to 5 days for a teacher termination or a state employee termination. We issue final decisions in workers' compensation, driver's license, child abuse and neglect, and all the state employee terminations.
That's a fine, by the way. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Then we issue recommended decisions in many of those other cases that we hear, including the teacher termination cases. About 40% of all the cases that are referred to us actually go to hearing. I do have a policy that in order to keep a current docket at OAH because of the volume that's coming at us, a DUI case from the time it hits our door to the time we issue our final decision is not on our docket longer than 120 days. Workers' comp and all the other cases that pass through OAH, we have a one-year policy from the time it hits the office. Roughly 95% of the cases that we receive timely progress through that system, and 99.9% of our decisions are issued within 30 days of the close of the hearing. I currently employ 6 full-time hearing examiners, including myself. I have a full docket, as well as 6 staff. And then I have 5 contract hearing examiners located around the state that are specialized to hear either workers' compensation cases or DUI cases. Does anyone have
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hafter, and before we do, thank you very much. We'd like to have an overview of what's going on and your perspective, and we'll ask some general questions, and then we will go through the budget page by page. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity on the time frames on different cases or types of case, What's the reason for, like, on workers' comp here? Is it just take that long to gather the evidence or details, or, you know, what's the reason for that extended time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, a workers' compensation case generally does. Often they're medically complex, and a lot of depositions are taken during the case. You know, I didn't used to have that policy in place about the year, and attorneys would ask for multiple continuances where the injured worker would be waiting, you know, sometimes 2 years before they could get their case through the system because of all the continuances requested. And so the attorneys around the state that handle workers' compensation cases know that they can't drag the case out anymore. Sometimes doctors are real hard to get scheduled, and that's why the year policy. I think most cases are well less than that year period. It's that if any attorney has a case that's going to go over a year in the office, they have to get my approval before that can happen. And I'll look at what the issue is and decide whether or not another continuance should be granted.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that's on any case, any type of case, that if it would go over your time frame, that it would require your approval.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Senator Hastert. And one of the things that I hear from my constituents as well is, and particularly it's usually the most egregious where the workers' comp issue is one that these people really are having some difficulty, and it's typically the docs. And it's just so hard to get the way it's set up procedurally to get that thing moving. And you know, you're sitting there and you're questionable about your, you know, you need the coverage and all the things going on in these people's lives. And I don't know what we can do about getting the docs to move forward. I don't think it's necessarily the attorneys in this case, and certainly not the division. But is there any way that you've thought about that to get the docs to respond a little quicker? That seems to, you know, in fact, I think a couple of times I've even called the doc to try to get him to, you know, please make a decision to help this, because this person, whatever it is, yay or nay, so we can move forward. Is there anything we could do in that arena?
Mr. Chairman, there is a statutory provision that allows us to have the medical provider forfeit remuneration for, you know, failure to comply with an order or comply with the statutory provisions on what they have to do in terms of submitting bills to the division and things like that. But, you know,
that's pretty tough. You don't probably use that very often. Have you used that, like, in the last year?
Probably a couple of times in the last year where a doctor just has failed to file the claims on behalf of the injured worker in a timely fashion. And, you know, we're hoping that it prevents the doctor from going after the injured worker then for payment of the medical bills. It's tough. And attorneys, before I implemented the one-year policy, that was, you know, the biggest objection to it, that, you know, we're preventing an injured worker from having a fair hearing because it takes that long to develop a case. But as it turns out, most cases, the issue isn't that complex that case can't progress through OAH in a one-year period of time.
And how long have you had that one-year period again?
Probably
three or four years. And you've seen real positive results, and that's a good thing.
I have, Mr. Chairman. I've seen very positive results.
Of course, if you send a letter to the doc saying you won't remunerate them, then no payment, you're back to square one, because then you have to get another doctor, another opinion, and then you've exacerbated the issue for the worker that really, really needs to get this thing resolved one way or the other.
And, Mr. Chairman, also increased the cost associated with the case. You know, the more doctors that they have to depose, and it just sort of escalates at that point.
You know, we're so fortunate in Wyoming. We've got a really good workers' comp system set up, and the one thing that I think if we could improve, it would be the timing of some of these contested cases, and moving to the 1 year certainly has been beneficial. Is there, if you were to, you know, this is something you would do by rule or whatever, how you do it, if you went to, like, 9 months, is that just making it too tough, or have you thought about that?
Mr. Chairman, I have, mm-hmm. And the attorneys that handle workers' compensation cases around the state have asked me not to tighten it any further than I already have. I will say, to Joan Evans' credit and the folks at
She's sitting right behind you. She'll take credit for it. That's why we did it this way.
And John and crew, their overall referrals are down. What has been referred to us, however, the number of cases actually going to hearing is up. And I think it's because the referrals, you know, they're weeding out the ones that really need to be settled prior to sending it to the office and then going through that process of appointing attorneys and getting it settled. The cases that are coming at us are actually going to hearing, a high percentage of them, because there is merit to the battle. And so to their credit, although the numbers are down somewhat, our hearings are up. And maybe Joan can speak further to that. I don't want to put words in her mouth as to why that's happening, but that's what appears from my end of things.
And the two of you have been dedicated and served a long time, and we thank you for that. You have six attorneys, I believe. You said that. What's the turnover been in that part of your department, your agency?
I recently lost one attorney. She had been there a year and decided to go back to the district courts where she had previously been. Before that, they've all been with me for years.
How does the pay scale of those relative to, like, attorneys in the AG's office or agency attorneys, are they all pretty comparable?
Mr. Chairman, I think they're pretty comparable. What I discovered was that the AGs have a step increase, and I don't have one of those. And so when I hire somebody, they're pretty well stuck there because of the way the system's been set up. And I've been working with Dean recently to try to figure out how we can also implement a step process for my hearing examiners. So hopefully that will happen.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstader.
Clarification, Director. You said cases are up. Earlier you said 40% actually go to hearing. So is that number correct then? And that's a number that's gone up?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, it is a number that's gone up. I think overall, you know, the all other cases that are sent to us that are not workers' comp and not driver's license, those cases have increased in number and increased in actually going to hearing. For instance, I know it doesn't sound like much, but over the last year, we received six teacher termination cases. And they only recently started because the law came into effect July 1 of 2012, and so the contracts were already in place. So in 2013, we started getting these cases, and they're week-long events, the hearings themselves, and then have to be reduced to findings of fact and conclusions of law. The last one that I did had 120 separate numbered paragraphs in the order. It was very complex. So the 40% is up, I think, probably by 10% anyway from a year ago.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to get into the weeds a little bit about rules of evidence in the APH, the Administrative Procedures Act. From what I understand, and this from what you told us today, that it's kind of variable as to whether or not what is the actual record that you can make a decision on. From my perspective, from what I learned this summer, was that you only make the decision on what the agency record is, and it doesn't follow forward into the hearing process. It's not like a real trial. Now, can you kind of flesh that out and see and give me an understanding about how the rules of evidence differ in the APA Act versus regular civil case?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the rules of evidence are relaxed in an administrative proceeding. They're there for guidance, but, you know, for instance, hearsay comes into our hearings, and that doesn't happen in a trial court. Mm-hmm. But they are trial-type proceedings. You know, the attorneys call witnesses. The witnesses are cross-examined. There are opening statements, closing statements. We take the matter under advisement. But, for instance, if it's an employee termination, the termination needs to be based upon the notice of termination. So whatever's been noticed up, that's all that the agency can use at the hearing to support its termination. That's one type of case. Workers' compensation cases, as Representative Nicholas can vouch for, the theories can be developed along the way. So a final determination might say you're denied compensability for one reason, but the AG and the defense attorney can develop the case and set forth other theories as to why the particular side should win. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like it's depending on the agency, there's a difference in the record and a difference in how it can be applied. I'm just wondering if there's any need to at some point in time to have a more uniform type of a set of rules, so you can develop. Let's say everybody has that option to develop, as in a workers' comp case, a new theory or new facts that might come in, but because the agency record is set, they're barred from coming in, and you're restricted to your determination based on a set of facts that was developed previous, but somewhere, somehow, somebody finds out there's a different truth or a different thing, but you're barred in some cases from using the whole truth, and you're restricted. I'm wondering if it would be, you know, an advantage to you know, both the plaintiff and the defendant to, in that case, to actually have that flexibility.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the rules for each type of case that come to us are set forth by that particular agency. So, for instance, in a personnel case, the personnel rules say that it has to be based upon the notice of termination. And so we're bound by those rules that the agent, you know, coming from the agencies. So we do follow the APA, and the rules of evidence, as I said, are more relaxed so that hearsay can come in and hopefully we can get the truth. But
yeah,
most agencies are bound by their final action.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's the part of the system that I think might need some help, because of an agency seems to be at a competitive advantage to the person who's terminated, because you're terminated and the only record that's going to go forward is what the agency lets in the record. That seems pretty one-sided.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, you're not limited by what the agency sends over, but the agency is limited by what they notice you as your termination, the reasons for your termination. But the record can be developed throughout the process.
Okay. Well, Mr.
Senator Meyer.
Well, I guess one follow-up then. Would it be, I guess, your understanding that if you had a system where the only thing that could be used as an agency record and it couldn't be developed or changed in any way, that would put the person who had a conflict with the agency at a disadvantage?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, would put them at a disadvantage, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. President Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, quick question. You have 5 field offices, and I would assume that they're located based on caseload, workload. Why is there none in the northeast corner of the state, say Gillette, Sheridan, that area?
Director?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, I do have folks in the northeast area. I have a workers' comp hearing examiner who's located in Moreland, and I have one in Casper who drives to Gillette.
Okay. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Director, just on those, and I think you said you had 5 contract hearing officers.
Correct.
Are there others, because I know the hearing officer based out of Casper that hears the hearings in Gillette doesn't hear that, at least in my experience has been he doesn't hear them in Casper. Do you have other situations like that where you've got someone traveling to hear all their cases? And can you speak a little bit to why that situation with respect to Gillette and those hearings there that you have a hearing officer traveling in for those?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I have Mr. Drell in Casper who goes to the counties of Johnson, Sheridan, Crook, Weston, and Campbell. And he does travel to those locations because he has an active private practice in Casper, and then he doesn't have to deal with Casper attorneys, for his private practice, and then possibly rule against them in a workers' compensation matter. And so that's the reason that I have him traveling to the northeast corner. I do have the Cheyenne office handles all the Natrona County cases. I have a hearing examiner who travels up there or can do video conferencing with the Casper load.
Mr. Chairman, on the other four contract hearing officers you have, do they hear claims in their home counties and elsewhere, or how are they structured?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, my contract hearing examiner in Evanston does hear Uinta County cases, but her practice is such that she's not actively involved in cases within her own county, but then she goes to Lincoln, Teton, Sublette to hear cases in that area. My driver's license attorneys do not hear cases from their own communities, and those are all done telephonically. They have counties outside of the county where they practice. The only exception is my contractor in Warland, who does hear, Washakie and Hot Springs County, although his practice also is not real active and adverse against attorneys that are right there in his community.
Mitty? Director, I have a question on your handout about the different salaries paid to the, or not salaries, but contracts. Expenses paid, and there's a difference. Is that based on, ability, years of practice, just the market conditions for those? Like fifth down the list is 100,000, the first is 121. Is that why there's a difference?
Mr. Chairman, no, they're all paid the same salary. The top three are all paid the same salary per month. It doesn't matter how many cases I send them. That's what they're getting. Those are expenses included, and. For instance, Sharon Rose, she has to travel up to Jackson. The expenses
are higher.
Was
travel expenses or something like that?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chairman.
The other question, do you notice any, in given the nature of our state and how different areas are obviously are driven by different things, and are you seeing any kind of trends as to more cases here in one part of the state relative to other parts of the state, any kind of trends occurring that might be problematic or troublesome?
Mr. Chairman, there are counties that are higher than other counties, but I think, the explanation is, for instance, the oil and gas industry in certain counties will have a higher work comp load. The driver's license, the DUI cases, Laramie County, Sweetwater County, Natrona, and Albany are all high.
No big trend that just reaches out there and grabs you. They're just high, and they have been high.
Mr. Chairman, there was a trend going in Teton County, high DUI area, and that
probably a sheriff ran on that on his ticket or something.
That has settled down some. We're not seeing quite the numbers that we used to. It used to be way off, but it's not as bad as it used to be.
One of the things that might be occurring, we had a lot of activity in Sublette County relative to oil and gas, and that's gone down considerably because of permitting issues and different things, and now there's a little more activity over in Converse County. And it's probably a little early to see any changes, but that might be something that you might see coming in the next year or so.
And, Mr. Chairman, I do keep track of the number of cases we get by county.
Okay.
I don't have that information with me today, but I do keep track of that and just look for trends.
Okay. Anything else, committee?
Mr.
Nicholas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm looking at your fee amounts for your various hearing officers. Is that predicated on the amount of time they spend? That you have a difference in the salaries or the fees for each one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, it is not. It's a set amount, depending on whether they're a workers' comp hearing examiner or a driver's license hearing examiner, and it doesn't matter. They get that amount no matter how many cases I send them. And so if we have a month where, you know, it was a high referral month, they still get the same amount of money, and whether they go to hearing or not.
Okay. And so Mike up in Riverton does one less service type of hearing, so that he's at 100,000 instead of 118. Is that, am I getting that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that question.
Well, for example, you've got Mike Barton at 100,000 and Ed Loom at 118. Is that
right,
because he's performing an additional service?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, it's because Mr. Barton is doing driver's license cases, and so they're making less per month than the attorneys handling workers' comp cases.
And just in response...
Go ahead, Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. To some of the questions that were expressed earlier, and I do a significant amount of workers' comp cases, and if there's an expedited case that needs to be done quickly, then the OAH is quite responsive to that for needy folks. There are lots of cases that need to go over a year because of the certain facts, and it's not really working a disservice on anybody, but they constantly keep our feet to the fire, so you do a good job on that. Could you let me know about what the most recent status is of raising attorney's fees from $120 an hour to $150 an hour?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I am in the process of trying to do that. The governor's office had asked me to revise and update my rules on contested case hearings, and I do have special rules on the workers' comp hearings. That chapter I have not revised yet, but I am in the process of doing that. And the other revision to just the general rules for contested case hearing was in an effort to help agencies that refer cases to my office to have the same set of rules going in, so that, you know, the citizens of Wyoming know what set of rules they're going to be playing with if there's going to be a contested case hearing for their particular issue. And so that was a priority. That part is finished, and so I do intend to go to just that chapter on the special rules for workers' comp, and I will proceed with that.
In that regard, Mr. Chairman, I noticed that with the new computer system, that the discs that you receive that have the record on it, they come out as photographs, essentially, instead of PDFs, and so that the copy cost has tripled as a result of that, as the mechanism that they come over. And so that's just something perhaps you might want to address, the price per page as you print it out on a printer, that you might want to consider when you go through those new rules. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Meyer.
Just kind of a follow-up on one of your answers to Representative Nicholas, that you're going in and trying to get some uniformity in your hearing rules, so everybody knows, you know, where you're at. Now, if you make those rules on how you're going to do your procedures, but an agency in their rules has a conflict, which set of rules is the rules that actually is relevant as far as your administrative procedures act?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the statutes, my enabling legislation actually says that the OAH rules supersede any rules of referring agencies if I'm going to hear a case from you know, any other agency outside of workers' compensation and driver's license. So OAH rules would control.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd love to talk to you about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're certainly welcome and able to do that, Senator Meyer. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Director, jumping back to that, Representative Nicholas mentioned that $120 an hour that attorneys get paid. I'm just wondering, I know a number of years back, at least in our community of Natrona County, the claimants were having difficulty getting folks to represent them because of that rate and other issues, I'm sure, as well. But I'm just wondering, are you seeing that still? I'm assuming you are, but are you seeing that around the state, or are claimants able to find representation when they need it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, we do have that issue. It's been ongoing. I think when I started at OAH, the attorneys were making $60 an hour. And so it's been 4 years since I've raised attorney's fees. And, you know, it's time in order to be able to have a big enough pool of attorneys who are willing to represent injured workers.
Okay. Committee, let's go through your budget.
All right. It actually begins on page 11. And I guess by way of explanation, we're not generally funded. Instead, we're funded 55% by the Department of Workforce Services and 45% by the Department of Transportation. And then whatever we don't spend, we return to our funding agencies. And we have two operating units, and the first one begins on page 11. And this is our operating unit for our workers' compensation cases and our driver's license cases, because it's money coming from our two funders. And I guess...
Before you leave that, how do you determine the amount? I know I've been asking this question. It's non-statutory. Sometimes it's an MOU. It's based on billable results. How do you determine the amount of money from Highway and Workforce Services in terms of what you get in your budget? It looks like it's a set fee. It's not based on number of cases or caseload. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Mr. Chairman, it's strictly split by a 55% from Workforce Services and 45% from Department of Transportation.
How long has it been like that? Long time.
The 17 years that I've been there. Yeah. So
is
I think
it fairly representative of the split over the, I mean, right now the way caseload is that a fair representation?
Mr. Chairman, I did do some research on that, and I think it's a fair representation. The workers' compensation cases, you know, the numbers are, you know, half of what the driver's license numbers are, but the cases take twice as long and the decisions are twice as long. So, you know, I think it's a fair split. The volume of driver's license cases makes a lot of work for us. And I think the 45% and 55% is a fair split at this point.
You know, one of the things that happened on the driver's license, and there was a bill maybe 3 or 4 years ago that was, a lot of us didn't like it and voted no, but it was one of those mandates by the feds who will lose dollars. Has that increased the caseload on the driver's license side for you?
Mr. Chairman, it greatly reduced the number of cases that came, yes, by several hundred.
Yeah, because of all we had to go through to get our licenses. Okay. Okay. one of the questions I have deals just generally about your budget. When we did the budget cuts during the last completed general session in the supplemental budget, the governor chose not to have you come with any 8% reductions, and the legislature did as well. And when you look at your budget going forward, it's pretty much the same standard budget. The base budget, the standard budget, is a little bit higher than the base budget. The thing that I've noticed when you look at those is you made a reduction in some of your 200 series, and you've added some into your salary side of it, if I'm looking at it correctly, from your base to your standard. Could you speak to that, please? And I'm talking about page 8. They're small dollar amounts, but I'm more interested in you know, I think that's a good move, but it looks like you transferred it from there to administration, and could you explain a little bit more of that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We did add two additional employees, which is why the increase in the personnel services. I added a, well, the legislature gave me an additional hearing examiner and a paralegal. That was in 2012.
Yeah.
And so that's why the increase in those.
Yeah, I was saying I don't remember doing it in 13. We did it in 12.
Correct.
And so, but if you as you developed your budget for the 15-16 year, though, you've taken your supportive services, restrictive, some of those down, and then you've added a little bit of money back up into the administration, which is already inclusive of the two people you added. I'm just curious as to why.
No, I think a lot of this was with the employee benefits. Is that correct, Lynn?
Because of the insurance or the retirement, or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, continue.
Okay, I did want to point out that we're currently, our current budget has a computer allotment in it, which is why we've zeroed that out. So we're not asking for any money for computers for this.
You know, this has been the year of the computers, and yet you're not. Did you? You didn't get the memo? Is that what happened? I mean, every agency has come with computers. And
Mr. Chairman, I think we're probably a little bit behind usually when it comes to computers. I don't know. But it is in our current budget, so we didn't need any additional money.
So it's not about getting the memo or not.
No.
Okay.
Did you want me to go category by category?
Committee, I don't think so.
Anybody have any questions?
I don't think so. I think this is a budget that you've worked hard on. We've seen it before. We don't see any growth. There's no expansion or exception requested. You're managing your caseload well, and you're keeping the attorneys in line, which is never an easy job. So why are you chuckling there, Representative Nicholas? Yeah, you resemble that remark. Okay. Any other questions, committee? Continue then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there are no other questions on the 0201 unit, then if you'll flip to page 15, that is our 0202 unit. It's really just a pass-through account for those all other cases that we do. We charge $120 an hour for our services to agencies who refer cases to us for hearing that outside of the work comp driver's license. And so it passes through this account and gets deposited back into the 0201 series so that the Department of Workforce Services and DOT isn't funding these all other cases that we're doing. So quarterly, Lynn transfers money that we receive. It's roughly $20,000 a quarter that we're earning back into the 0201. And so this is the money that we use in order to operate and put the money back into the 0201. I hope that makes sense. It's a little bit confusing.
Yeah. What I think you're saying, and when you look at the bottom of page 15 under employment and highway, they go to zero, and yet the other two is where the money is, and that's because it's coming from other agencies. I guess, Dawn, question, it's not a big number, but we would find the corresponding negative revenue side from the other agencies is going to here. Would that be correct?
No, Mr. Chairman, because these are non-appropriated DOT funds, you would not see the expenditure on their side.
No, I'm not talking about DOT. I'm talking about the other agency that they bill at the $120 an hour. Don?
Mr. Chairman, those you would see as an expenditure,
right,
not a revenue item in another agency's budget, and they would be embedded probably in the 900 series.
So you really don't see it specifically, and those that have had these charges in the past probably have a number in there that's the same as before. Which agencies are primarily made up of those two? Is there any particular ones, or just kind of a broad cross-section?
Mr. Chairman, I counted 40 different agencies.
40?
That referred cases for hearing within the last year to 2 years. You know, we get quite a few from A&I, the personnel cases. It's across the board at 40 separate agencies, a lot from the Department of Family Services and the Department of Health. you know, a lot of different issues with those two agencies, and we issue recommended decisions to the director of those agencies.
Mr. Chair.
All the licensing boards.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
How many different school districts out of the 48? Not all of them, evidently, but.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harshman, I got six cases, but from five different counties within the past 8-9 months.
Okay.
Two from Sweetwater, one from Laramie, one from Sublette, and one from Washakie. So those, so far, are the counties that I've received them.
What kind of cases are they?
Those are teacher, Mr. Chairman, those are teacher termination cases.
Yeah, that's
school
what
district.
I thought. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Director Stepson.
Director, on those all other cases, I'm assuming that agencies have the option to use a hearing examiner from somewhere other than your agency. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, that is correct.
Do you have any idea or, Mr. Chairman, any indication on how many agencies or how many hearings are going outside and hiring maybe third-party attorneys or something like that to do hearings for them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I don't know of any agencies that are going outside of OAH right now, to be honest with you. The Board of Medicine is new to OAH. They had been one that they were using outside services, and they're now using OAH too. So other than attorneys, I can't think of anyone going outside of us right now. Maybe we haven't had a board of dental examiners in quite a while, and that used to be part of our docket. So they might be one agency that has gone outside of OAH.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's a way for us to find that out or not, but I can't imagine that agencies can get a more efficient outside source for these services. I'm sure if you saw them going to third-party attorneys, you're going to see much more than $120 an hour. So, I mean, that's good. I'm glad to hear that agencies are going to you, but I think it's something for us to keep our eyes open for.
Okay. Is that it?
Mr. Chairman, I think
you got that smile on your face. It looks like. Okay, committee. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. We appreciate your service and the length of your service. And I don't anticipate any callbacks. And I believe that Senators Hastert and Representative Stubson will carry your budget on the floor. And if they have any questions, they'll get in touch with you. And thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
While we're doing workforce services coming up here, we had Mr. Co-Chair, I hadn't had a chance to talk to you, but in terms of our scheduling, we want to talk about how we're going to handle the week. And, you know, Wednesday afternoon, we've got some bills to deal with. What I like to do is whatever the committee thinks. I like to go ahead and work hard on Wednesday and do all we can relative to shifting agencies around to come in Wednesday so we can have Friday. I think that if we're going to get out of here, there might be a storm coming to try to get out of here Friday at a reasonable period of time. And I have no problems in working late a couple of days to get this done, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get the agencies reviewed and do what we need to do. But if there's a way to facilitate that and get us done so we don't have to be dealing with a late departure Friday afternoon, I worry about everybody on the road. I won't be here Friday. Not that that means anything, Mr. Co-Chair, because you're going to do whatever you want to do anyway. But how does the committee feel about trying to do that? So, Don, let's go ahead, and I'll leave it up to you to adjust whatever agencies. Let's make Wednesday a full day, and then if we have to work a little late Wednesday or even Tuesday, whatever it takes, so we can get out Friday at like what. And I don't want it to look like the co-chairman runs a lot better, faster, more efficient committee than I do, but he did a great job Friday and got everybody out of here. So how'd that work for you, Steve, something like that? Okay, let's do that. And then get back with me on a kind of an updated thing, and Steve and I'll review it, but we'll plan on that. Okay. Joan, good morning. Welcome. Workforce Services. We're a little ahead of schedule. Floor is yours.
All right, let's keep it that way. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Joan Evans, Director, Wyoming Department of Workforce Services. I have here with me at the table Angie Buchanan, our Chief Financial Officer for the agency, and also want to recognize other members of our team who are here as needed to answer questions. Haley McKee, our Policy and Public Information Officer. Lisa Oswald, our Deputy Director. Toby Wickham, our Administrator over all of our employment programs. And John Eisbart over our Standards and Compliance. A brief overview about our agency, of course, reorganized 3 years ago. The Department of Workforce Services, 563 employees. Our budget, just over $161 million. Of that, 15% general funds, 43% federal funds, and 42% other. And of our employee count, we run about 10% of those positions, 100% tied to general funds. The key function of our agency, over 55 programs under our purview. In general, they include recruitment, employment, training, career guidance, rehabilitation, enforcement, benefits, collections, workplace safety, and mine safety, just to give you a general idea. Our agency, I've been here for 7 years now over the former smaller Department of Workforce Services and now over the combined Department of Employment and Workforce Services. Since that time, it's really been my philosophy, as well as our Deputy Director, Lisa Oswald, that we adopt a commitment to excellence to serve our constituents. We have agency values within the agency that were adopted by our team of customer service, communication, respect, collaboration, and professional development, both internally and try to exhibit that externally with the individuals and businesses that we serve. Our organizational chart is included in the budget book. It is customer-driven. It shows our programs at the top of the chart, our leadership at the bottom to illustrate and show a visual that we're serving people all over Wyoming in multiple locations, and the programs need the support. Administration is there to support those efforts and do what we need to do to support them. Since the reorganization in 2011, our focus has been on realignment with a priority on serving businesses, individuals as well, but really an emphasis on reaching out to businesses and helping them to understand how to access the services that we provide while conserving resources and repurposing positions, repurposing funding where we need to. Through the support of both the governor and the legislature, we've been able to address a number of challenges that have been associated with the reorganization. Just to name a few, conflicting cultures, two very completely diverse organizations coming together in a very, very short timeline. Outdated technology, outdated infrastructure, facilities, buildings, aligning our human resource structure. You would see different classifications not matching up from DOE and DWS. So someone who had a very similar job in the former DOE was classified at a completely different, in a different place than someone doing that same job in DWS. So bringing all of that together in the org structure that we created and trying to figure out how to shift all of that around. And you'll see a lot of that reflected in these exception requests that move positions from funding or assignment as far as their division goes. We're getting that addressed this time. New assignments have come into the agency, and position decreases over time due to hiring freezes, some positions being given back, the restructuring of the enterprise technology services, those kinds of things. And also working within the policies of state government to do a reorganization can present its own challenges at times. But like I said, the focus has been on aligning resources where they can achieve the best results. Some notable achievements that I feel like I should mention to you is that throughout this time, over the last three years, we've had no interruption at all or service to our constituents. I feel like we've been able to accomplish a lot in a very short timeline, bring along the people that need to do those jobs and keep doing a job and improving at the same time. The new assignments that we've taken on during that time, workplace safety, the assignment of the state occupational epidemiologist to us, a reorganization of OSHA, bringing in new positions that were assigned via the legislative process to address very long wait times for employers to get OSHA consultations. Contractor preference, both the enforcement side, and we've created an advocacy side to that as well for to help employers understand that they could receive a citation if they don't hire Wyoming labor. Head Start, a collaboration office was assigned to the agency.
Before you leave that, about the on the contractor's preference, and there was an issue in Rock Springs about the timing where you were required to try to hire someone under, because of the contractor's preference, yet that person wasn't available, and so then the fact that you couldn't, you were put in a kind of a compromising position. I know you and I talked about that. Has that been resolved?
I believe so, but I need to kind of refresh my memory about that particular situation, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it was an issue of the drivers. You couldn't, when you went down to the to your unemployment part, there were no people there that qualified, and so you couldn't get anyone to fill that position, yet you were mandated because of the contractor's possession preference law to do that, and so it was just kind of an internal end run that prevented you from doing what you were supposed to do. And
as an employer, you
yeah,
mean,
as
Mr.
an employer.
Chairman. Right. The idea is that our offices are there to support them to get those posted and notify them immediately if there is not labor available, which gives them the exemption then to hire out-of-state labor. So I feel like we've improved.
Yeah, and that was exactly what happened, is they didn't have any on the list, so they went to outside. Someone had just moved in from another state and was ready, willing, and able to go, and they hadn't been posted on your list of the fact availability was. So when you hired that person, you were violating the way you dealt with it. And I know it's been working better, and so you made those adjustments.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is a number of days that we have to certify whether or not that labor is available, but it's not very much. And I feel like I mentioned that we were assigned the enforcement side of contractor preference, and what we realized once we got going on enforcement is that there was so much education that needed to be done, and it was very difficult for the compliance person to be also the educator person, because when employers would see the compliance person coming, they're like, okay, you know, it just wasn't well received. And so again, through some realignment, we were able to bring on some expertise to be separate from the compliance side to help an employer that might be facing a challenge like that and communicate that back to the compliance side and work together. And also the advocacy, the consultant works with our local field offices to be sure they understand how to get that certification done and so that the employers are not waiting.
Where are we on the contractor's preference rules because of what we did the last session? Are we working on those? What's the status of them?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any work in process on rules right now.
So the changes we made during the last session, are you anticipating rulemaking changes, or what are you going to do in that regard?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just asking John Eisbart that the rules that tie to the last changes are done.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So they're
okay.
Out there.
Thank you. Okay, please, any questions, committee? Representative Wallace.
Did I understand you to say that the state epidemiologist had been transferred to your agency from the Department of Health, I'm assuming?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, no, the state occupational epidemiologist that was formerly in the governor's office was Dr. Tim Ryan. Previously, he worked in Governor Friedenthal's office, and so that responsibility was transferred to our agency, and Dr. Max Sewell is the occupational epidemiologist. So he works to identify trends and fatalities and injuries and work with industry partnership groups. I'll continue on. Again, some things that we are focusing on right now. The complete rebuild of the unemployment insurance tax and benefit system, the computer system that runs on COBOL mainframe right now. We're in a four-state consortium. We are now actually in the build phase of that consortium that will complete within 3 years. This project is moving along very well. It takes a huge amount of human resource commitment and time. We have also support from the ETS division on this, as well as our three other states that have partnered. But we have teams of individuals in our unemployment insurance division that work for 2 weeks at a time with these teams working on iterations of this system as it's built, all the while needing to be doing their day jobs as well. But this has to be done. This system will not be sustainable over time. If you put in a legislative change or something of the like, the programming to it is extremely complex and creates all kinds of problems, not only for claimants and employers. So we will reap the benefits of this being completed. It's just the hard work of it right now.
Before you leave unemployment, what's the funding? What's the status of that fund? How much money's in it, our unemployment fund?
The federal fund, we have about $247 million in the federal UI trust fund, about $47 million in the state.
And how is that working in terms of the demands and the way we pay, how much we charge employers, and how that's working? Is it a pretty flat line and we're getting revenues in there to sustain the demands? It's working pretty evenly?
Right. The federal fund has recovered substantially since the last recession. It did dip down into probably 140 million or so. I have it in here somewhere. When claims were very, very high. We're one of only 20 states with a solvent fund right now. Thank you, Toby.
Say that again.
We're one of only 20 states with a solvent fund right now that didn't have to borrow and didn't have to do anything. Right. The low in 2010 was $147 million. And we just released the 2014 tax rates for employers, and there has been a decrease. So I think that's good news.
Would you give us a snapshot over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of the revenues, the balance of that fund, and claims, and just how we've done it? Because we've done a good job.
Yes.
Not only of creating jobs for people in Wyoming, but taking care of those on unemployment, and we didn't leave them holding the bag when everything got difficult like a lot of states did.
Right. Do you just want a summary of the amounts?
Yeah, summary of the amounts and just to, so we can have a feel
mm-hmm.
for that.
Provide it back to you at a later
mm-hmm.
date. Okay.
And then also the rates you're charging employers.
Yes.
It's good to see those go down because it speaks well of everybody working together.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just a few other things I would like to mention. We're largely a compliance agency, especially with the combination of the programs in Department of Employment. And one of the things we heard, I heard loud and clear from businesses were that they did not understand how to access the programs. They felt like they were penalized a lot without really knowing who to contact, how to go to question answer, those kinds of things. So again, talking about realigning resources where they could do the most good, we've been able to provide support through a position that we call a business liaison. It's a no wrong door approach on our website. If a business has a question, that's where they can start. That individual will find the answer, get them to the person that can answer that question. They are responsible for going around the state, putting on our employer information seminars. Those are very well received in communities, places like Buffalo. We've seen upwards of 60-plus employers. We've been to Gillette, Rollins. We've been all over doing those. Creating advocacy programs with contractor preference. If we're going to have compliance, we need folks to understand what the rules of the game are. In workers' compensation, we brought in a claimant advocate to decrease the adversarial relationships that can occur between a claims taker and a claimant over time. So when there's a problem, they have someone to go to try to help unravel that before the whole thing just falls apart. Director Deb Ballmer talked about the decrease in cases that workers' comp is sending over to OAH, but that the ones we're sending are more complex. That's because Steve Schotsky, the former administrator over workers' comp in the former Department of Employment, was tasked with reviewing every single case that the agency was planning to contest before it went to OAH, so putting it through an extra level of review, and we weeded out a lot of cases. We were not winning those anyway. The agency was contesting, and we were not winning. And so we put an extra level of review to stop them from even going. And I think that's been working very, very well. Again, our organizational chart is developed and really structured around teams.
Mr. Chairman.
President Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Director Evans, so how much, just a rough idea, has this advocate reduced the workers' comp cases that go on to AOH?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, I hate to throw out a number that I'm not certain of, so let us get that to you. However, the advocate that works with between the claimant and the claims taker, that's one role, and then the extra layer of review is another role before the agency contests the case. So we're talking about two things there, but I think both have helped just move things along, so to speak.
Okay.
We have a quality assurance team within the agency. We pulled monitoring out of every division and put it onto one team so that we can look at quality assurance through a holistic view. The reemployment focus, I think, has been one of the biggest things that we've seen from the reorganization, because we were asking folks to file unemployment in one agency, search for work in another agency. Tracking that was very problematic. It still has its challenges because our systems don't talk to each other right now. But that will be remedied partly through this rebuild of the UI system. But we're able to be sure folks are completing their work search requirements. We're able to have better communication. I can tell you that the two agencies weren't talking to each other before we were reorganized. I mean, we were doing two different jobs for the same group of people, and we were not communicating. So, I mean, anecdotally, I can just tell you that that is a huge, huge turnaround.
And when we did the reorganization, it was in the 2012 session. 11 was the 2011. Time flies.
Okay. Right, it does fly by. We've created a special investigation unit.
Representative Nicholas.
Just a couple of questions. I'm sorry to interrupt. Director Evans, on that four-state consortium, could you just provide a little bit more background on how much it costs, when it's supposed to be done, what's our share, what are the other states? Give me a little background on that.
Sure, please. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, the effort to rebuild the system really started in about, 2008, with a feasibility study that the former Department of Employment participated in because of ARRA dollars that were made available for states to start exploring how feasible it was to rebuild these systems. They participated with three other states, Arizona, Wyoming, Idaho, and North Dakota, and worked for 2 years getting together, writing business cases, what do we need a new system to do, and if we could ever find the funding, how feasible would it be to rebuild the system. That went on for 2 years. In 2011, the U.S. Department of Labor made available a supplemental budget request for states and or consortiums to come forward and apply for money to do system rebuilds. They really put some pretty strict parameters on that. They wanted consortiums to apply because they want to be able to replicate the work that they're investing in for other states, because many, many need these system rebuilds. Some only do benefits. Some only do tax. We need the whole thing. At that time, the consortium made the determination to move forward to apply for federal funds to rebuild the system. Idaho dropped out at that time because they wanted to do an in-house build, and Department of Labor said, if you're going to use federal funds, we're not going to do that. We haven't seen success using your in-house IT staff to rebuild these systems. They're too complex. Idaho dropped out, did their own thing. At that time, Colorado came in. They had just had a failed system build a couple of years prior to that and are in desperate need of a new system to get overpayment stopped and fraud and those kinds of things. So we put in a $59 million of supplemental budget request to the feds. That was accepted. The overall project is a $72 million project. Wyoming has, I believe, 3 to 4 million of our own money that was set aside through what's called READ Act money that was given many, many years ago to help keep the UI systems modernized. So that pool of money was originally like $8 million and has been used over time to do patches and reprogramming. And so there was some of that resource left. Each state had to kind of put in what they could. So the overall project is $72 million. We are the fiscal agent for the project. The $59 million was appropriated by the feds to Wyoming. However, Colorado has taken the lead role. So they're doing all the procurement, and that was really based on conversations with the governor and how he wanted our role in this project to shake out. So you'll see a lot of payments to the Colorado Department of Labor in the 900, right, Angie, series. That's because they bill us as the consortium moves. So we're 2 years in now, and we're in build phase. A vendor has been chosen. The vendor has started work, and the build phase will run through 2016 when the system will be launched. I feel like it will be successful. The expertise around the table, not only from the four different states, but from their IT, it's a very high level of participation. The governance structure is that the four directors of these agencies in the four different states, the four CIOs, were all heavily involved in the decision-making progress and troubleshooting, all of that. So. It's moving. It's a heavy, heavy lift, but it has to be done. I mean, we had to do it. Just a few more things, and then we, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Special Investigations Unit put together within our agency to look at fraud, not only in unemployment insurance, but workers' compensation. We've been very successful. We've had a couple of prosecutions already. And it's absolutely necessary. I think the money that is paid out, not only in workers' compensation but unemployment insurance benefits, we need to have someone looking at claimant fraud, provider fraud, all of those different kinds of aspects. We have a way for individuals, anybody, to report fraud to us in a number of ways, and we've received a lot of tips on that. We've had a rollback in unemployment insurance rates, workers' comp rates. We've been able to work on co-locations for a lot of our offices. We combined our unemployment insurance and workers' compensation tax divisions so that employers don't receive two different audits now. It's the employment tax division, and if they are selected, they receive that audit at the same time, which is less of an intrusion. I feel like we've been able to reduce bureaucracy for the people that we serve. It's not 100% complete. It's a work in progress. It always will be, but we're getting there. Our constituent complaints have gone down by over 50% over the past 3 years, and that we get those from a variety of different ways. You email me. You email me. The governor's office sends over what we call blue sheets. This year they're blue. Sometimes they're green or pink. Or just someone individually contacting us with a problem. Lisa handles every single one of those personally and sends them out to our division, asks for a response. Then she looks it over and be sure that we not only answer their question, but that we connect them with other resources that they might be available for. Say they're complaining that they didn't get their UI benefits. That might be a accurate determination, but the fact of it is they're still unemployed. So are they making a connection with our field office? You know, are they looking for a job? Those kinds of things. The workplace safety effort, I believe, has been we've made progress. We have several industry alliances that we're working with and supporting, looking at not only the fatality rates and where we're seeing those, but serious injuries and hospitalizations to look for trends and work with those industries that are impacted.
And while you're on that, too, I think that's one of the programs that's really, really working is a consultation for your people to go out and work with, particularly the smaller companies, to help them and get with them rather than being out there just to try to write pink slips. They go out there and they spend time with them and say, listen, here's some things you ought to work on, whichever company they go out to, and then those people have that opportunity to try to correct the things. Then they come back, and I mean, it's just instead of being in your face, so to speak, it's there, we're working together for safety. I think it's a good program. The one thing is, and we did it, the money that we set aside, the $10,000 grant, that you could go to small employers or anybody. And, you know, that program, it hasn't really got off to the kind of start that maybe I expected. Could you give me an update on where we are with that? And
I have the numbers, and actually it's...
Is that something you're going to do later on in your presentation, Joan?
I wasn't really planning on going over it unless there was a question, but I can tell you that it has been accessed. We have... contracted for about $323,000 of the $500,000 appropriation so far, and
And that was for the two-year period in 2013-14, correct?
Right, so that'll get us through the end of this biennium.
And then as if we don't use it, does it revert?
No, it's actually money that comes out of the Industrial Accident Fund.
Right, and stays there.
And stays there. And so it wasn't new money.
Do you build that up as you spend it down? So we have to reappropriate. So once you've spent the $500,000, do we have to... We have to redirect another $500,000, like in this budget, to take care of that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. I think it's just earmarked within the fund, and we know we can't go over $500,000 for this program. Angie, would you think something different?
What I'm trying to get to, it's working. We've done it through June 30th of 2014, and I want it to continue through the next biennium. I'm wondering if how you do that in your budget.
Mr. Chairman, can we defer to
sure.
Angie?
Please identify yourself. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Angie Buchanan, the CFO. And could you repeat that question? I missed part
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is I think that's a pretty decent program, allowing people to participate. And I know we appropriated the $500,000 with the original bill for this fiscal year and biennial budget that we're in. As we move forward to 15 and 16, if we wanted to have that available to come from that fund that was specifically earmarked for, do we have to have anything in the budget to do that?
It was a part of our 900 series standard budget, so it was justified in the Chapter 17.
So it is in here?
Right.
The 500. It's in Chapter 17. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, so $363,000 contracted for so far, and impacted employees from the businesses that have applied, about 2,200 have received some kind of impact from this. We are tracking injuries for those employers prior to application for the safety funds, and then we'll track them after so that we can, I think we're legislatively mandated to provide a report on whether those individual businesses saw any kind of decrease in injuries because of use of those funds. So we are tracking them, but there's been some very innovative things come forward.
You know, all of us want to provide the safest work environment we can for the employees of our state, and there's always discussion about Wyoming and where we're ranked, and a big part of it, of course, is travel. And, the people that work for me, they get up at 4 o'clock, drive 2 hours, work 12 hours, drive 2 hours back, get a short night's sleep, and get up and do it all over again. So there's that travel component. And so I want to be sure that we have some good information that this approach we're taking really is working, so that'd be great to be able to provide that.
Mr. Chairman, and also, I think it was good news in my mind that the Transportation Alliance adopted some training practices after Dr. Sewell released his first annual report on transportation fatalities. And, a lot of those are out-of-state over-the-road truckers that encounter our Wyoming roads, but they can also be our Wyoming workers out there. And so our contact with those industry alliances that we now have in refining, transportation, oil and gas, we're working on construction, also one in ag. I think we've seen some tremendous results. The Wyoming Oil and Gas Safety Alliance is the longest standing one that's around, and it's like 700 members. Representative Burkhart's very familiar with that group. So a lot of those industry alliances are kind of tailoring their efforts after that. And so they're able, Dr. Sewell goes and talks with those groups and can really get down in the weeds on their trends and what they're seeing and talk about solutions there. And I think the decentralization of OSHA as far as having those consultants in communities versus all working here and going out. So in other words, the consultant in Gillette is building a relationship with employers in Gillette so that they know who he or she is and they don't have to try to figure out who to deal with here in Cheyenne. So those are some of the things. The summary of our exception request, as you will see.
Before you get into that, yeah. How much is in our workers' comp fund? What's the balance?
$1.5 billion.
Okay, and have you assessed the revenues from that relative to how much the employers are paying and the employees' requests, and how is that balancing out? Is there a break we can give to the employers, or what's the status of that?
Mr. Chairman, rates are going down. We're going to see a decrease. They've been flat the last 2 years, right?
Which is what we want, and that shows that we're working, doing a lot of things that are better on our safety side.
Right. Actuarially, you know, Oliver Wyman is our actuary. They feel like the fund is solid to cover every claim that's in the system throughout the life of that claim should we end today. And that's what we need to have there, and that's what is there.
Part of the issue, too, and I know, John, you and I have been working on this, is when you have the small employees, small employers in Wyoming, and I don't know what that number is, 50 or under, or it's a lot of them are 10 or 15 or under, and you have one major claim, that just shoots your experience rating out of sight, and so you're in a position where it takes a long time to ever do anything about that. And I know we're working on trying to facilitate a better way to do that. We've been working on it for three years. What are we making progress? Are we getting ready to come out with a real change, or where are we on that?
Mr. Chairman, we presented to let me back up. We talked with the governor the chief of staff several months ago about the change, the new experience modification rating that we have discussed, where you take away the emphasis on frequency and look, or you take away, in other words, one incident for $250,000 doesn't put you in a detrimental place as much as 10 at $25,000. In other words, we want the frequency.
Right. It's a frequency issue.
It's a frequency issue. And so even though changing the experience modification rating process did not take legislative action, the governor wanted us to work with the Labor Committee on it so they were aware of it. So we were able to get that presented at the meeting in November, and we had some great comments, especially from employers that are on that committee, and so they're supportive of the agency moving forward. It'll be a two-year rollout of that process so that employers can see what their rate is now, what it would look like under the new structure. They have an opportunity to ask questions, and then the Labor Committee offered to take up the safety discount programs as an interim study as well. Just to look at, are they still working? Are they effective? Is there any kind of legislation we need to be able to incentivize employers to be safer to drive down their rates? And so, yes, after we got the green light from them, we've started the process. So we're going.
Yeah, and I'd hope that we can make a lot of progress in this year, and just anything you can do to expedite that, because this just has an impact on those smaller businesses. And you're so right, one incident, and they just get blown out of the water, and they pay for it for years.
Mr. Chairman, we can share with you the timeline.
Please give it to us.
We have it available, and we're moving on it now.
Okay. Continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Director, just from an overall standpoint, has there been a cost savings from the consolidation? And if so, how much? And if not, then what's your expectations?
John?
Mr. Chairman, that's probably the number one question I get asked. How much money have we saved from consolidating? We could probably sit here and talk about that for the next 6 hours.
We're not going to.
But I will say this, that it's very hard to calculate because of costs that go up. So If you're talking about even just salaries, we've given back a few positions, we've lost positions through freezes, but we've seen increases in salaries. We've seen increases in fixed costs. We've seen reductions in federal funds. I feel like what we've been able to do is completely realign two agencies that were supposed to be working together that weren't, to provide better services to businesses and constituents, all the while not asking for more, and all the while giving back positions through a variety of different means, and facing a reduction in funding sources like federal funds, facing reductions in the past in our general funds. And I think I noted at the beginning, we have only 15% of our budget is tied to any general fund source. So, and some of those are very specifically allocated, like the Workforce Development Training Fund, the Quality Child Care Program, things like that, that have been legislatively assigned to the agency. So I think overall, we can demonstrate cost savings like by giving back a director's position or giving back an administrator's position and things like that that we've done. But I think what we've done the best at is freeing up funding somewhere to be able to cover a gap in something that we've seen someplace else. And I don't know about you, but I Senator Meyer?
No, he's just... You got to understand, Senator Meyer whispers in my ear and says these things, and sometimes they're picked up by the mic.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nicholas, or Representative Nicholas, does that help at all?
Representative Nicholas.
Yeah, some, but the what that sounds to me like, that you haven't been able to identify, other than budget creep, real substantial savings, but you've improved business and the services you provide, which ultimately may lead to more savings. Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I think the tricky thing about saying you saved $3 million is that if I were in your seat, I'd say, well, where is it? I want it back. but I think we've said...
Wait a minute.
You would. Is you that, would say that if I said that.
Well, so you're...
Okay, I'll give you an example.
Go ahead and give
Mr. An Chairman,
example.
We've consolidated our entire motor pool, okay? And I'm telling you, the devils are in the details sometimes. I mean, don't mention vehicles to Lisa. She made us fall on the floor. But in trying to figure out, okay, how many vehicles do we have? Who's using them? Are they sitting there? Are they being used? Those kinds of things. So if we've realized savings there, we may have used it someplace else we needed it. Does that make sense? Of course, you know, working within our object codes and our orgs and things like that, because you have to keep in mind, the former DOE offices in Casper didn't have voicemail. Okay, I mean, we took on some pretty antiquated things. No wonder people were complaining. They couldn't even leave a message on someone's phone. So how do you ever get a hold of anybody? You know, those kinds of things. So it's like, well, if we can save money here, then we can fix that. If we can save money here, we can fix that. And so that's been the focus. I'm meeting with the governor, I believe, on January 9th. And I think I'm going to provide him a very comprehensive report on the effort over the past 3 years with the reorg. And I think at that time, we'll be able to have an update and a conversation on, is realignment the way we want to focus going forward? Do you want to see very specific reductions moving forward? And if so, we all need to understand what the consequences of those will be, which, you know, we can do that. So I think, you know, I think what the focus was right now is getting organized, figuring out how to get this ship to move forward, and then now where do we want to go from here?
You know, if you're going to have that meeting, you know, a lot of us really thought it was a good idea to do that, the reorganization, still do. Is there going to be information you could share with us? And we might even, because Representative Nicholas is going down a road that I think a lot of us need to ask mm-hmm. those hard questions on. We might have, would that be available in a callback? Will we have some information then that you could share?
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'd be absolutely happy to share, you know, and after I'd rather have the conversation with the governor first and then be able to share that.
We sure want you to talk to the governor and Brett first.
Absolutely.
We want to do that. Don, let's put that down, that may be something we could get you back here, and there may be other items as well, but that'd be one of them. Okay, anything else? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think along those lines, this is an agency a lot like ETS, where, you know, we put a lot of things together and we're still sorting them out. But after you get through and you've fixed everything and all the problems that you see and every building's painted and the screen door still works and the gutters are running water, got the house in order, so to say. At that point in time, are we going to do like a zero-based budgeting so we have a baseline on all these things and then we can start from there? Is that kind of the game plan, or do we know where we're going from that point in time when the house is in order?
Joan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I mean, I guess that could be an approach. I will continue to say I think this agency is doing more than it's ever been able to do on less than we've ever had. And really, that leads into the conversation of the exception requests. All but two are realigning positions, netting out to zero. And the two exceptions, after having a conversation with the governor in our budget meeting, those were added in. They were not originally included in my presentation to him. But those two exceptions, which we will go over shortly, are one, to support business training efforts, and two, to increase the number of participants that we can train in WIA. Oh, and the E-rate, yeah.
Okay,
that's
sure.
Work for you. But my point is, we are not asking to increase the infrastructure of the agency. We are not asking to add positions or add people. And we are giving back a few positions and one other that I can discuss with you as we go through the budget.
We'll do that then. Senator Meyer, you got a follow-up?
Yeah. Different topic, Mr. Chairman. And this is something that was related to me. It was an anecdotal thing. I don't know how true it is, but I'm assuming it probably does take place, and this has to do with unemployment. Came to my attention that somebody said that they tried to hire back one of their former employees that was on unemployment. They were getting $23 or $25 an hour. They were going to raise their wages by $2 or $3. The employee said, "I'll get back to you, see whether I can make it work." And he got back to him and said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not going to work. I get more benefits on the unemployment and other stuff that I have right now. So I'm just going to continue on that track." I mean, it is a free country, but from my perspective, we don't have to pay for these freeloaders. I don't know whether that's happening.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the maximum weekly benefit on unemployment is $432 a week. So I find it hard to comprehend why someone would turn down a $23 an hour job to stay on unemployment.
Okay.
That isn't acceptable, and they would need to accept that job. So we would hope that the employer would let us know about that, because then we could look into that claimant not fulfilling their work search requirements and not accepting an opportunity that's available. That's not what the program is designed to do.
Okay. On the job attached, is that something Wyoming does, or is that part of the federal law? Because that's a good program. Is that, how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, that's part of the federal program,
attached.
The way that the unemployment insurance system is set up.
Okay, I want to, in general comments, any other questions, committee, general, before we get into the budget? Senator Hastert, and by the way, I mean Senator Dockstetter, by the way, Senator Hastert and Representative Burkhardt will carry your budget in the respective floors, so they will be the go-to guys. Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, just quickly before you leave your introduction, Director, you talked about taking these programs out, the business liaison, the constituent complaints started down. It's worthwhile to keep doing that. You have some new exposure out there that obviously wasn't working before and now is working.
Joan?
Mr. Chairman, I think, yes, I think we're seeing some tremendous results from having those resources available to employers. But I think we have, you know, I mean, we continue to have a lot of work left to do. And so I would think so.
Okay, committee, we're going to take a short break and stretch our legs and then we'll get into the budget, hopefully here in 5 or 6 minutes. Okay, we're back on live. Joan, let's start through your budget. What I'd like you to do is just walk us through the whole thing, page by page, standard and exceptions, and we'll just get into it along the way.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll start out on page 4. The budget summary table gives you an overview of the agency, the standard budget, and the governor's recommendations, which bring us to a total of $161 million and an authorized employee count of 561.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Director Evans, just sort of kind of as a global starting place, looking at the positions, could you just give us a little bit background on the change from the base budget to the standard budget? I know the governor has not allowed two of those positions, and then the three additional positions that we see in the end over what your base budget shows.
The new, oh. Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, the two positions that you see reduced were positions that one was in employment and training and one was in unemployment insurance. They're attached to federal funds. They were vacant for a period of time, and I don't know, Brett, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Were they kind of considered above the cap, or were those the ones that were recommended to us by budget that we eliminate them? So they are being eliminated, and the federal funds that are attached to those. The ones that were added, Angie and I are having a little side conversation here saying that they were due to the OSHA positions that were added in during last session. Mr. Chairman, can I defer to Angie to explain that to?
Mr. Chairman, they were added during the supplemental budget, and we had to B11 in the positions and the funds, and then now we were making.
Could you put the mic a little closer, please, so we can hear you speaking very softly?
They were added during the supplemental budget.
Still can't hear you.
I'm talking your outside voice.
They were added during the supplemental budget, and we had to B11 in the positions and the funding, and then to make them permanent, they were part of the department adjustments.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would also mention that we are in the process of returning another position that is attached to general funds, and that's in conversations with the governor's office about a vacancy that we had that was a general-funded vacancy that happened after the budget was prepared. And so we're working with Brett right now to figure out how to actually do that. We'll probably B11 it right now, and we may have to keep doing that until the next budget cycle. Brett, did you have anything else to add about that deal? So there is another position that's not reflected in this budget that's attached to general funds that we're in the process of returning. If you turn to page, we'll be going over basically five different divisions of the agency. So starting with division 0100. That's the Administration and Support Division on page 15. This division includes Office of the Director, our Program Assistance, which is the Workforce Development Training Fund, Quality Child Care, Serve Wyoming, our Employment and Training, State Inspector of Mines, and Mining Exams. We do have an exception within this. That would be on page 18, and this is in regard to realignment of positions, either for revenue source or for unit of program, like I had spoken to you earlier about. Over the past, really, this is 3 years' accumulation of figuring out who's in what seat and being paid by what. Bear in mind, folks have always been paid out of the right funding source. This is just correcting it in the budget documentation. So it isn't like they were working in UI and being paid out of workers' comp. That was actually happening, but we want the documentation to show it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, Director, as a part of these realignments, were there any sort of adjustments in classifications, any adjustments in salaries for these employees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, yes. We did both. Some were classed down when appropriate. Some were classed up to be more equitable. And mostly the ones that were classed up were because they took on maybe two or three roles, more jobs than they had prior. We have a document, I don't think I have it with me right now, that actually shows the whole progression of every position and what happened to it and whether it was classed down or classed up. But, yes.
Mr. Chairman, as a net, do you recall, did you see a net increase in the salaries associated with these positions?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, do you mean overall for any reclass position that we did in the past 3 years?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, thinking about any of these that you're reflecting as part of the budget, I'm just wondering in general, as part of those adjustments and reclassifications, if you saw an increase in your salaries paid.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, this reflects almost an exact net to zero for the realignment of these particular positions. Some funds, you know, other funds might have increased, federal funds might have decreased, general fund, you know, in the moving around, but it netted out to zero.
Question for Brett on this. Brett, you know, we've asked a question before about salary classification changes. Did any of that occur with any of this net to zero in this particular exception budget request, priority one revenue correction?
Mr. Chairman, I can't answer that question off the top of my head, but consistent with some of our prior conversations, we're putting together a crosswalk that will show you in this realignment where the position was, what its compensation level was versus where it landed and what its compensation level was. So we're working on a common format for a number of these agencies where you see a lot of realignment, and this is one of those, so that you'll be able to kind of track and see what occurred at the position level.
You know, it's hard to follow on page 19 the debits, credits, and how it flows through. Maybe there's a little bit better way of showing that to us so we could see that in a get it back to us on that, Joan, because it's, I understand, but a little flow chart might help us on that. Is that what you're getting at, Representative Stubson, in that area?
Mm-hmm.
Could you do that then, please?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
And I was going to ask if we could see that, but if I just understood what Brett just said, that what you're talking about is this kind of reclassification, reorganization kind of issue that happened with the Department of Workforce Services, you've got that format for a number of agencies that are going to come, and is that what I just understood you to say?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins. We'll try that one more time. Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we're looking, this first came up with A&I in your conversations with Dean Fawcett. So we know that there were some position movements, actually a number of them here in workforce. I know Department of Health, I believe there were some realignments as well. Department of Education, you're going to see them working very hard to realign positions and establish a baseline for how they would ultimately structure that department. So we'll attempt to do that. I think it's important, though, for us to try to provide you a consistent format so you're, from agency to agency, you're not struggling to see what they did.
Mr. Chairman, and I think I was going to ask Joan if we could see that, but we'll just wait to see what the standard format is. I think if we can get used to that, I think that'll be helpful for us as we kind of look at these things and see where we ended up.
One of the things, too, Joan, is, you know, we had the standard the budget reductions that we did last general session, and I know in your budget we had quite a bit of discussion about ultimately where it started and where it ended up. And then I know that in your budget now, you did not biennialize those reductions. We asked you for a way that you might, what reductions you might utilize if we were to proceed with that. So whenever you get to that part of your budget, have you done that? That's the first question. To biennialize, have you looked at the ways where you would biennialize those cuts? You haven't done that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know why, but I'm lost.
Okay. We had reductions last time that was only for 1 year period. Then as we went through the legislative session itself, we fine-tuned that. I don't know whether JAC did it, but it came up with a final number that wasn't where you started out. And then we wanted that to be biennialized, and you did not do that in your standard budget. And the governor said you don't have to, and we understand that. I'm just curious, as we go through this, where those cuts are. I know we had $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was grants, in and out of state travel, contractual services. Just speak to those when we get to them, and then we'll be able to see the impact of that and if we were to do something like that, how we would move forward.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, you're right. We had about $1 million, and it's my understanding that the standard budget was reduced in those areas, like things like quality child care, the training fund, employment support funds, the travel that it impacted. So
it was reduced for the 1 year only. That's the point, not 2 years, for the entire budget cycle.
Brett's saying it's okay. What?
Well, it
I'm
is okay.
I'm just confused.
You know, you did what the governor asked you to do.
So you're saying take it off one more
I'm
time.
I'm just saying yes, so you biennialize it. So if we had said let's look at what the biennialization would be, there would be another $1 million worth
okay.
of reductions.
So
and
in other
the
words.
The theory being then, of course, if you needed expanded exceptions, you would start at that base budget instead of the one that does not include it. And that's what I'm coming from.
So, Mr. Chairman, what you're saying is try to point out to you where that would have an impact as we go through there.
And if we were to double it up, would that be where you would double it up like your
okay.
object code 0135, mm-hmm. out-of-state travel, 315, would it be 630? And what the impact of that would be, those kind of things. Okay?
Got it. Sorry
and there's
about
only,
that.
You only have really three categories, object code 125, 135, and 150. It's in your last year's budget.
Precisely. And again, I'll just reiterate, we have a very small amount of funds we can target on general fund reductions. So
understand.
It gets down to splitting hairs sometimes on that.
Okay.
All right. So we've gone over exception number one then that's associated in the unit of offices director in the Division of Administration and Support. I would then have you turn to... page 24, which would be the Program Assistance Unit, Workforce Development Training Fund, legislatively appropriated program to assist businesses in providing incumbent worker training and provide funds for new hire training as well. We have two exceptions here within this unit. One is exception number two, which is a revenue correction for position realignment.
The same description as the one we just asked for. Include this, okay? Understand what I'm saying?
No.
Okay, we wanted on the last expansion and exception request you made because of the different revenue streams, the revenue corrections,
yes.
to flow through and let us understand it. Do the same thing for here.
So explain the specific positions?
Yeah, just so
okay.
we know what's going from where to where and
okay.
why.
Okay.
That's okay. Brett understands what I'm asking for, don't you, Brett?
Yeah,
okay.
Not right now, but provide
no, no,
later.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Gotcha. I'm
Unless
sorry.
That's on the top of your
I'm
head.
Not trying to be slow. It just appears that I might be. okay, so position realignment is exception number two. And then also within this unit, we have priority number nine for workforce development training funds, which would increase that appropriation by $1 million for the purpose of making available $500,000 for business training grants to assist small businesses in training their workers, $250,000 to target emerging industry sectors for training, $125,000 to target entrepreneurial training, and $125,000 to work on training for businesses that are struggling with issues regarding tax, human resources, basically business operational things that we see businesses struggling with in the state of Wyoming. To go back to
Mr. Chairman. 1 second. Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Evans, just a quick question on those training funds. Would any of those be used to train workers for these two new companies that are moving into the Laramie area? And have they requested any training funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, yes, they would, and I believe they have. But to follow up on your previous comment about providing notation of where we would biennialize reductions, the Workforce Development Training Fund is a place where we did see $300,000+ reduction, so that would in turn contradict this $1 million ask. I can tell you that industry groups and associations approached not only the agency but the governor asking that we make available more opportunities for businesses to be trained. It's a heavily utilized tool by businesses.
Mr. Chairman, while we're on that, okay, Senator Meyer.
And during break, I did get with the department's Volk Ag specialist back there, and one thing that these funds can be used for, and the reason this topic was brought up is I had a young lady from Cheyenne call me up about the possibility of training funds and entrepreneurial opportunities for the DD population. And actually in this area here, you could utilize some of these training funds for entrepreneurial startups, for a DD population or an individual, and there's some opportunities there that, although they might not be, you know, wide in scope as a major company coming into our state, there are possibility that they could offset some of the funds that are actually needed in the DD program. So it's something that I don't believe the DD population is aware of, or I wouldn't have gotten the call from somebody from Cheyenne, but that's something that, you know, that I just wanted to make everybody aware of, that this is an area in here that goes over into that problem that we also have in that area.
Mr. Chairman?
Brett, question on this. You know, the request got cut in half, and just a little bit of where the governor's coming from, but the other thing, too, Joan, for you, is this something that we might do with one-time funds? And so we talk about it every time, and the exception expanded, and how much do we have in there in the standard budget?
Mr. Chairman, a couple of things, and the one-time thing is definitely an option. In the 2011-12 biennium, the fund was being so heavily utilized that rather than making an ask, in talking with the governor and the Wyoming Business Council, they actually B11'd over $2 million from the Business Ready Community fund to assist us so that we could continue to train. We were able to train about 7,500 trainees in the 11-12 biennium, and then without that $2 million, we were back down to about 5,700 in the 13-14. And so the standard budget right now is, let me look really quick here, get to my page. I'm looking on page 28 at grants and payments on the program assistance. There's a figure of $7.1 million, but that includes our senior community service employment program as well. So the training fund is around $5
million. $5 million, okay. That's your standard budget, $5 million, that you asked to go to $7 million. Now it stands at $6
million. Okay. Mr. Chairman, yes.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Perkins.
And just, Joan, do you guys have some kind of report on or summary of where this money was spent in the last biennium, just kind of we get a flavor for, and hopefully it's not 1,500 pages. Have you got somewhere where a breakdown of where you could get that to us, so we can see where this money was used and what industries took advantage of it and how and that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, yes, we have it available, and I can tell you that the industry served range from mining to transportation, utilities, ag. hospitality, accommodation, food services, manufacturing. It's very, very diverse. So that's encouraging to us that it's not just focused on one geographical area and not just focused on one particular industry. The pre-hire projects, we've seen a lot of different requests for those. We've done a lot in technology lately for different companies. We've done pre-hire trainings in the oil and gas industry. So really, again, all over the map. And really the number that we're able to train is directly tied to that resource that's available. For the incumbent worker training, there is a match for employers that's shared with the agency, 60-40. For pre-hire training, those are paid at 100%, and there's a maximum per person per year that can be paid out per trainee. So there's all kinds of parameters around it, but it is an economic development tool we use heavily with the Wyoming Business Council.
Mr. Chairman? Well, the up in Casper, they have, like, out the McMurray Training Center. Is there an interrelationship between the type of program training that we're talking about here and entities like that provide that on-the-job training? Is there an interrelationship there? Some of this funds end up paying for that type of education?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, yes, depending on what the project is and depending on if they're partnering with an employer to provide a specific training. Oftentimes, that particular entity will come forward and put in a proposal to train under our Economic Training and Self-Sufficiency Program, which is not money in this fund, but TANF money that's available to train people to earn a livable wage. So it just depends on the type of training, but they have been involved in some of the pre-hire projects, which require employer partnership.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up one more. And then, so is that an example also like the CLIM? Is CLIM one of those agencies, you're familiar with CLIM?
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of these agencies that, or one of these entities that ends up with assistance through this fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, CLIM primarily will partner with us on economic training for self-sufficiency dollars, again, those federal fund TANF dollars, because they're trying to bring folks up to a livable wage, and they're not an employer. Employers utilize this fund, and they have a requirement under the business training grant to be training an active employee, and they have a requirement to bring that wage up and retain them for a certain period of time. Same with the pre-hire. They have to be hiring these people. They have to be an employer that's hiring these people, working with a training provider. So CLIM is a training provider that's working to train people to get into the job force. They're working under a whole different funding stream, but we do work with them quite a bit. They utilize federal funds, not general funds.
Senator Meyer.
So those TANF dollars, we'd see those in DFS's budget, not yours.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, DFS, we work as a sub for DFS on the economic training and self-sufficiency. So that amount is included in our employment. Oh, it's paid out of the 600 series money out of our employment and training, right, Angie? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
And one of the so I would take it with your request of $2 million, we ran that short of, I mean, how did you come up with the $2 million? Did we run that short on funds that are available for requests for this type of training, or where did you come up with the $2 million versus mm-hmm. the $1
million? Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, is in discussions with the governor on what amount would have an impact. And also, we know that when we received the $2 million B11 from the Business Council in 11-12, we knew how many trainees we could impact and what we could really do with that. So we started there talking about that, and then his recommendation was to go with $1 million. So, you know, it's really just what kind of impact we want to have out there to be able to use this as an economic development tool. If it's not there, the impact is we aren't able to assist businesses in training their employees. If it's there, we can do more.
Mr.
Representative Nicholas.
Just for my clarification, this is a program where you provide financial incentives to the employers to bring on either to train an employee or to find a new hire, and then you fund 60-40 as part, as part of their salary over a certain period of time? Or explain how that works.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, there's two components to the program. One we call business training grants and the other pre-hire. Business training grant means an employer has to already have that employee hired and identify a training need for them. And then they apply and say, this is the need that we want to meet. And then we split the expense of training that employee 60-40. They have to show wage progression and retention to be able to receive that portion of the funds that the state provides.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's on-the-job training?
No, it might be a conference, it might be a class, it might be a certification, something that they've identified.
Or it could be on-the-job training if they tutor someone or take them to a certain...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, we don't do a lot of that. But the pre-hire, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, is a similar program, but it pays 100% of the training costs. Neither program pays salaries.
Yeah, but there is a program that does match pay a component of the salary.
I know
that's a different...
Yes. Senator Bebout, Representative Nicholas. Yes, you're talking about OJT, on-the-job training affiliated with our Workforce Investment Act programs, federally funded for folks that face barriers to employment.
That helps. Yeah.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, the way that the TANF block grant works is the state gets about $85 million in a TANF block grant. And for the CLIMB program, for where their family services program are, you'll see that in both the DFS budget and the workforce services budget for the job training piece. So CLIMB, they're getting probably about $1.5 million in the DFS budget. And I'm not real sure how much they get in the workforce services budget. But for groups that do both family services and workforce training, will qualify for that part of that block grant both ways. And then there's other stipulations in there about how the RFP process works and how high you can go with legislative directives within that block grant, and then how high an agency can go with RFPs within that block grant. And that's specifically the TANF block grant.
There was a question in there? Thanks. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, for...
You concur with... I think Representative Escobel nailed it, and I agree with what he said. So.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. It's B-11 from the Department of Family Services to us, about $4.4 million over the biennium to put out RFPs for folks to come forward and train.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, we've covered priority number 2 and priority number 9 in program assistance. We can now move forward to, still in the Division of Administration and Support, the Unit Now Quality Child Care. This is a program that was established in 2007 to provide training and awareness around quality child care. This program was impacted in the last reduction, close to 300,000, I believe, of the overall million. That impacted our ability to award grants and scholarships for training in quality and child care related fields. And
in that area, Joan, you provided us with all your expenditures. This $1.3 million, where does most of that money go to you? I guess I'd like to have a list of on here so we have a better idea who it went to and the amounts.
Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of different components. There's this grants and scholarships, and then that's the training component. And then under the professional and contractual services, that's the awareness component. So that is RFP'd out to right now Linden. Marketing has that to do all of the public awareness around what it means to provide quality care for children. So things like the website. In the past, we had TV ads. We don't have those anymore. We have print material
all of that.
So how much of the $1.3 million will go to that kind of information?
The majority of it, but also we provide training for providers that I believe comes out of that as well. Or does that come out of $600?
This looks like an area where if you didn't want to have a lot of advertising, you might there might be further reductions. If I'm hearing you correctly, most of it goes to website and brochures and
about $850,000 of that went specifically to the vendor on that handles all of that awareness component. That is a piece of the legislation. There's three different components: the grants and scholarships, the parental awareness component. So, you know, things like calendars that we drop off at doctor's offices and the website and activities and all of that. And then there's training for business training for providers. That's also a component of the legislation as well. So there's three components. If there's reductions here, then we just have to reduce the amount of those things that are done.
Yeah, could you provide us a little more breakdown as to what those really are?
Yes.
And if you would, please. Okay, continue.
On page 34, you'll see the Serve Wyoming program, which was assigned to the agency about 4 years ago. Serve Wyoming, the match for that is 100% generally funded, and it's used as their match for their federal funds. It was formerly in the governor's office before it was in the Department of Workforce Services.
Okay.
Moving on to employment and training on page 37.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
I'm sorry. Before we jump off of Serve Wyoming, is there also, do they have a kind of a fundraising component? I mean, are there private funds put into that as well as the federal funds that we focus at?
Mr. Chairman, our role is to provide that specific amount of general fund match so that they can leverage that against their federal fund request. They also do other activities which involve raising funds other ways. We've also tried to avoid reducing that amount when we look at ways to cut, and we've cut the Workforce Development Training Fund or we've cut quality child care. We haven't cut this because it would directly impact their ability to maintain their level of funding with their match. So we haven't recommended a reduction there so far.
And Mr. Chairman, do you know approximately what percentage of their funding this particular amount makes up, just generally?
Why don't you provide that,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson? I don't.
Okay.
On page 38. The Employment and Training Unit in the Administration and Support Division, we have 23 field offices around the state where individuals can go look for assistance on the labor market, look for jobs where employers can post jobs, where they can receive information about registering for work, doing a resume, all of those activities. We have priority number 3, exception budget request, a revenue correction there that you will see on page 39 as part of our overall position realignment.
There again, that's something that's good when we net to zero and all of that. Just add that to that other component that we requested. Okay.
On page 40, you will see our priority number 10, employment support funds. Over time, we have a challenge in supporting our field offices. We have 23 of them throughout the state, some very large, some very small. We have seen a decrease in federal funds. We have had some of our federal dollars sequestered, and which has meant that our money that's available for participants is diminishing. So our ratio to admin to participant dollars keeps getting wider. We have a couple of choices. We can reduce our staff, and that's something that we may have to consider in the future based on the limited availability of federal dollars. But we also have money from the Employment Support Fund that supports the activities that are associated with the operation of these workforce centers. If you will look on, you received a flow chart. Looks like this as one of the handouts for today. Priority number 10 is requesting a one-time increase in spending authority to access money that's collected over and above the appropriation for the Employment Support Fund prior to its deposit into the Wyoming State Trust Fund one time. And what this would do is enable us to train another 330 approximately participants that come into our workforce centers and need assistance in training to look for a job. I can walk you through how all of this is calculated. The flow chart shows you how 40%, if you look on the far right-hand side box at the top.
Just a second.
It's in the back of the big package. It's on the back end of the
document. It's the last
page
of the entire package.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. There are three factors that go into how unemployment insurance taxes are computed. The base rate, the adjustment factor for the fund factor balance, which is statutorily set, and then the adjustment factor for non-charged and ineffectively charged accounts. The Employment Support Fund was created by taking 40% of the non-charged and ineffectively charged accounts and put into a fund where that appropriation is $9.9 million. And it can be used for four reasons. It's that shown at the bottom of the page. To offset funding deficits for program administration, collect and administer the revenues collected, further support programs to strengthen unemployment fund solvency, and support employment office programs administered by the Department of Workforce Services. Every year, a projection is done on how much money will come in based on that 40% of the non-charged and ineffectively charged accounts. The projection for 13-14 is $13.9 million. The appropriation is $9.9. So we have a difference of $4 million. By statute, that goes into the Wyoming State Trust Fund that's in the middle of the bottom of the page right down here. That can only be, once it's in that fund, the governor can determine what happens to that. If it is dissolved, it would that is there in case there is a crisis with the federal UI trust fund. Okay, that is the purpose of that. Interest off of that supports programs like the Workforce Development Training Fund. That's where we partially get some of the revenue to run that program. So what we're asking is that over and above the $9.9 million appropriation for employment support funds, which would be just over $4 million, before it goes into the Wyoming State Trust Fund, that we ask for an increase in spending authority of $2 million one time for the purpose of training participants that are looking for work. And so, that's what priority number 10 is.
So what you're really doing is the UI is it from the feds, there's $245 million. This is sort of a buffer zone in case that goes down, and we talked about that earlier when I asked for like a 4 or 5 year flowing chart that showed where that was. So what you're saying, instead of putting money in there to build that fund, you're wanting to take $2 million of that and reallocate it to another program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, in the 13-14 right now, we would be putting $4 million into that is not appropriated because we're collecting 13. Now, those collections fluctuate. That's why we're saying one time, because we don't know what the projection will be in the future. Because it's based on a lot tied to the economy, to the unemployment rate, and again tied back to that 40% of non-charged and ineffectively charged benefits.
And the risk we run, if we whatever number we pick, if we're under it, then less money goes into the state trust fund. If we're over it, we're in good shape.
Well, we are certain right now. We know the projection for 13-14 should be on. Of the $13.9 million, of that $9 million appropriated, $4 would go into the UI Trust Fund.
And
we're asking for two of it.
That, and that's effective immediately, correct?
We would be asking for that effective immediately, $2 million to go into the trust fund, $2 million to be spent on participant training.
And that's where the governor, you asked for $4 million, and I think the governor said $2 million. Yeah, Senator Meyer.
I'd like to fill in some of the blanks up here that we don't know with dollars. I think we can figure out what the adjustment factor is just with the math, but I'm just wondering what our total taxes that we have that we collect our payout and what's left over. I think we get the 40% because we know that that's 9.9 and 4. That's the 40%. The 60% goes back in to reduce the tax rate. Is that what that's used for? Or explain the top part of that and put in some I guess global numbers as far as just, you know, what do we take in, what do we pay out, and
so employers pay their employer tax rate is based on these three factors. So quarterly they're paying whatever rate is determined. The first two boxes, the base rate or the industry rate, depending on whether they have an experience rating with us, and the adjustment factor go right into the clearing account to pay benefits for unemployment insurance claims. And 60% of the socialized adjustment factor for non-charge and ineffectively charged benefits go directly into the clearinghouse to pay benefits. The 40% is diverted into the employment support fund. I don't have the numbers of total taxes that we collect and total amount going into the to the U.S. Treasury with me right now. I can get that for you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we do have the amount that we come out of the clearing account with, though.
Right now, in the clearing account, in the end of fiscal year 2013, there's $245 million in the clearing account.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to figure out how many unemployment benefits we pay and how many taxes we bring in. And
mm-hmm.
you don't have it right now. If we could get that just because, Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that is that I think we need to try to make a determination about how big the Wyoming State Trust Fund should be. And that really is in a relationship somewhat into how much we pay out in benefits every year. So we have a comfort level about whether it should be $1 million or $2 million. I'm trying to get that comfort level. And without those, I'm flying blind.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I will clarify that benefits are not paid out of the Wyoming State Trust Fund.
Right.
And there, the statute in the middle box here, 27305, 27305B, and 27305C, puts a safety net fund factor. If total wages in the state, if the trust fund is not within 3.5% of that, then a fund factor kicks in, which increases the amount of tax. That's where that adjustment factor kicks in for an employer. And that has decreased since last year as wages get closer to the total of the two trust funds added together. But there's a fund factor safety net that the legislature put in place, 10 years ago, to be able to, again, keep that solvency at the forefront of everything that we're talking about. I just want to mention that.
Yeah, and so there again, we'll move on, but you projected you're going to have $14 million. You want to take $4 million of that and do other things with it effective immediately. I think we
all
million, get it.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, you wanted $4 million, now you have $2
million. Mr. Chairman, in discussions with the governor, we mentioned there was $4 million. We did not include this in our original proposal to the governor. In our conversations in our budget meeting, he asked me, what do you see out there as needs? We talked about the training fund. We talked about the admin to participant ratio going down and ways that we could solve that. And I mentioned to him that there were $4 million over the appropriation. That's where the $4 million came from. I'm telling you what $2 million would do, and we're comfortable with that. We'd be comfortable with anything that would help our participants.
And Don, just so we're clear, get a 27-3209 so we know what mechanism kicks in where the state trust fund offset what the feds may not do. I think that would be helpful as well. And then the question I have, and let's move on, and you can provide this to us, is how we got from 14 to 8, you know, in terms of what you're, as you move forward, what number you're using and why there's such a reduction in 15, 16 as compared to 13, 14.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, before we jump on, just one quick question. And Director, have we ever appropriated out of that funding stream before?
I think so, right?
Get that to us.
Okay.
Get that to us. Okay. All right. Any questions on this one? Let's go on.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we'll move on to State Inspector of Mines. On page 47, the State Inspector of Mines is assigned statutorily to the was assigned to the former Department of Employment. I will note that the State Mine Inspector is appointed by the governor, and but it's kind of a unique situation. They do report within the agency. They have seven full-time authorized staff. They conduct mining inspections, and they work with the State Mining Council on mining exams.
Any questions? Okay, moving on. There are no exception requests. Moving on.
Moving on to the 200 series, which is vocational rehabilitation.
Okay.
The Vocational Rehabilitation Division offers individuals with physical or mental disabilities opportunities to participate in the workforce. It also assists injured workers in getting back into the workforce after some kind of life-changing injury. We also have, as part of that division, the Social Security Disability Determination Services, which is a 100% federally funded program. And we also have the Telecommunications Relay Services for hearing impaired. So folks can communicate via the phone. These positions, this program is operated on 78.7% federal funds and 21.3% in-state matching funds. On page 58, priority number 4, revenue correction, again, you will see a correction of positions.
And same thing again on that one that we asked for before. The one quick question on the telecommunication service program. I think that bill that we passed many years ago is due to sunset during this biennium that we're going this 2-year cycle we're going into. If that happens, what happens to that $1.1 million? Just get an answer to that, if you would, please. Okay, continue.
Okay. Moving on then to the 300 series, unemployment insurance, on page 63. Unemployment insurance, we will start with the tax on page 64. Also, the way this is set up, the labor market information program is also tied to the tax program, even though that program reports now in our new organizational structure to the Office of the Director, which has been very beneficial in being sure that we're fully utilizing the information and resources that are available to that and connecting them with initiatives like the legislature is working on with the Hathaway study and the teacher salary modeling and things like that. And so that division does a lot of heavy work. The UI tax division, you will see on page 68, we have priority number 5, revenue correction. To realign positions.
Same request. Senator Meyer.
Joan, getting back to that question I asked you earlier about the only way you can find out if a if a person on unemployment benefits has been offered a job is for the employer to contact your office, or how does that work?
Joan?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the claimant has to provide weekly documentation to the division on things like work search, contacts with employers. I believe job offers are part of that documentation. So there could be a situation where, I mean, hypothetically, they could be misrepresenting their situation. That then would be once we have a we have two different ways that the agency, well, we have two programs within unemployment insurance that monitor those kinds of things and audit. And if it's caught, then they could be responsible for paying back their benefits. So it's not only, I mean, an employer reporting it is one way. The agency may catch it as well.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering of like an incentive program to employers to report to you that they've offered these jobs, so you've got a mechanism to cross-check the self-reporting mechanism.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the biggest incentive to an employer would be that they wouldn't have to be charged for the claim. I mean, they not be responsible for that going against their experience rating. So it's definitely in their best interest to let us know about that. And the division does audit the work search records that a claimant puts forward.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Moving on to unemployment insurance benefits section on page 73. The only thing there just to note is that position going back, that's on page 74.
Yeah, why are we eliminating it? It's been vacant for 14 months, I guess. Is that why? Or
That 14-month vacancy was actually in the employment and training. This one had a different situation. I can't remember. But the 14-month was because we were waiting. It was a manager position, in Rollins, and we were trying to make the determination if we really needed that or not. And it sat there too long, and so the recommendation was made to take that and this unemployment insurance position.
Okay. Any questions? Continue.
Moving on to on page 77, the unemployment insurance revenue. This is the part of the budget where we account for penalties and delinquent payments that come into the agency and the interest that's earned on them and the 5% penalty that's paid on them.
Questions? Okay.
On page 80, that is the YCAM project. Again, on page 81, you will see the base budget appropriation that is not in our standard budget. We are the fiscal agent for the entire project, and that's why you see $59 million there.
Questions? Okay.
Page 82. The research and planning unit, priority LSO Hathaway study. This is, I believe, priority number 8. $500,000 was appropriated during the 13-14 budget for work that our research and planning division did with the legislature on working on Hathaway tracking and working on teacher cost pressures for the school funding model. And it's been requested that that work continue, and so the $500,000 that comes out of the E-rate deferred federal revenue funds would be included in our budget. It was omitted from our budget somehow, some way, and that's why it's showing as an exception, I believe. Am I right about that?
So it was in the 2012 session that we started this, correct? The 2012 budget session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yes. It ended, and then we need to continue it, and it wasn't included in our original.
Okay, well, could you provide us an update or a summary of what we've seen from this? Just because we need to continue it, I'd like to know if it's working, what data we have, and the benefits of it.
That we could probably also loop in Dave Nelson on that, because he's been working with the
Joint Education. Loop in whoever you want. I'm just trying to look at justification.
Right, yes.
Okay. Thank you, and provide that to us. Okay.
Okay, moving on to the 400 series, page 85, the Labor Standards Division. Labor Standards is mandated to enforce all laws enacted by the legislature related to labor. So that includes fair employment discrimination, wage and hour, resident labor and contract preference, prevailing wage, and child labor. We have 7 compliance officers and support staff that carry out those duties. We have an exception request on page 88. That would be priority number 6, revenue correction for positions.
Same deal there.
Same deal there. Moving on to 0500, which is workers' compensation, found on page 92.
Okay.
Workers' compensation responsible for administering the program, collecting premiums. We also have within that unit the worker safety OSHA. And we do claims processing, employer services, provider services, intake records, audit programs, and work with the medical commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have a question, Joan, about the upgraded computer program that you put in there. Could you just provide me us with a general update of what's going on with it, what the kinks are, what the problems are having with it, and what the forecast for it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, thank you for asking. Last September, so that would have been September of 2012, we launched a new system called PowerSuite. That system had been 4 years in process. So when we reorged the agency, it had already been in process for 2 years. It was already behind schedule and slightly over budget. We worked for the next couple of years to get this thing off the ground. In the meantime, bear in mind, that's really prior to ETS being involved in these kind of projects. So you have a couple of factors going on here. One, a project started, now 5 years ago, being supervised and monitored by the IT staff within the agency. And then we brought the agencies together, kept extending the launch deadline because of really data conversion concern issues. We finally reached a point in time where we had to make a decision to, in working with the CIO, to either launch the system or start over. That's kind of a tough one. Start over on 4 years of work or do the best you can to get this thing out the door. So we did it. We launched it. I will commend our workers' comp staff. It was very problematic at the beginning. We're a year into it now, and we have fixed many, 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 many of the issues. But at the beginning, providers were not being paid. Data did not convert. We didn't know what providers hadn't been paid. And we set up triage lines. We had staff that was working 7 days a week, almost round the clock, basically, to address these issues that providers were being impacted by. We've made tremendous progress. We do every 2 weeks we do an update to the governor's office about the issues that we're still facing. And, in fact, we just had an update meeting with Flint Waters and his staff last week with the governor's staff. All of workers' comp IT transitioned to the new ETS division as of this last July. So it's now under the purview of ETS, with some of those folks being assigned back to the agency. So it's a work in progress, but overall I can say that we've made a little bit of lemonade out of a lot of lemons.
Did you catch that last one, Representative Nichols?
Yeah. So tell us, what does ETS say about the system? If you started 4 years ago and it's just now in operation, from my standpoint, it doesn't provide as much information as the old program. And the green sheets are gone, which are actually very useful in workers' comp proceedings, and that information really isn't available. To me, it's the system in some ways is worse than it is now than it was. But so I'd like to see what your objectives are, your goals when you provide it, your 2-week reports to the governor, and just where it's going with it.
Mr. Chairman,
long-term forecast is for.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nicholas, we can provide that and provide you with the timelines on the improvements that will make it better than the old system was. We have no choice to go back now. I mean, we have what we have. But we have Cognos developers that are coming on board. Cognos is the reporting engine that that runs some of the things that you're talking about that that employers used to be able to tap into, claimants used to be able to tap into that they can't. The PEERS reporting system, which was very, very useful for employers, has been down. That's on ETS's docket now to get that up and running. So we can show you all of that. And, yes, the idea is that the system will be more functional than the old, of course. But we have made some tremendous strides.
Mr. Chairman, what's the cost have been of this whole system upgrade, and what future costs can we anticipate through getting the program up and running the way satisfactorily?
I can get you the cost. I don't have the cost off the top of my head. And then ongoing costs now are maintenance of the system with the vendor.
I think we'd like to have that, Joan, in a, that okay. Provided to the committee. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if you will turn to page 96, the start of priority number 7, exception, revenue correction, again, realignment of positions.
There again, ditto on the previous stuff. Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, that is the conclusion.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've got a couple of things before I do. Committee, any questions? Senator Hastert, Representative Burkhart? President Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Evans, how's it working out with the state epidemiologist, occupational epidemiologist, being in your department now rather than kind of floating?
Joan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, it's been very positive. He is works daily with our workers' compensation staff and is also works side by side with our research and planning team up in Casper. Prior to Well, two factors. One, the fact that they were that this individual was in the governor's office and very isolated was problematic. Two, when the two agencies were separated, there were all kinds of issues with that. So now everybody's together. Dr. Sewell, I have a policy team that reports directly to me, and Dr. Sewell's on that team, as well as Tom Gallagher, the manager of the Research and Planning Division up in Casper. And so they have the former state occupational epidemiologist and our research and planning division did not have a good relationship. It just did not get off to a good start. But we're all together. We work together now. We plan together. We talk. We've made tremendous efforts in being able to put together a surveillance system to monitor the fatalities and the serious injuries. And I think Dr. Sewell's annual report that was just put out just over a month ago really demonstrates that. So all positive.
Sit just a second. Senator Hastert, do you have anything? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joan, you've got a lot of federal funds or special revenue coming into your agency. We're talking about increasing the retirement contributions. The governor's talking about even more of the obligation falling on the agency. How are you going to handle that? I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the responsibility to cover any increases in salaries from our other programs is always on those programs. So that'll be incumbent upon the agency to work within those program budgets that are federally funded and other funded to do that, as we have in the past. However, where that presents a challenge, it's also presenting a huge challenge that our employees have not had an increase in a substantial amount of time. It directly impacts morale. We lose people. We have a hard time getting the people that we want. So it's a double-edged sword. We have to work within the money that we have to do that. But from a management point of view, I support it.
Mr. Chairman, over the course of the biennium, if you go 5% for the governor's pay raises, and then I think the legislative recommendation is about 1.5% less on retirement, but you could be looking at close to 8-9% increase in your 100 series. So, have you taken a look at that to make sure that this is going to all work through? If you had like an 8 or 9% in your 100 series,
go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that's at the point that you have to make some tough decisions. We might not be able to fill some positions and may have to give you know, leave them vacant or send them back to cover those costs in those particular programs. But that just may be how it has to go.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the answer I was looking for, is you're going to have to do it with vacancies. Mm-hmm.
And do the, you know, that can be done through attrition. There can be a variety of ways that can be done.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Joan, my apologies. I had written down just a check mark to ask you on back on page 63, we're on the unemployment insurance, the $500,000 out of the school foundation program account, and I'm really sorry I missed your explanation on that or where that was.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, what was your question on page 63?
The we have the $500,000 school foundation program account exception request.
Okay, that's actually back on 82, I think.
Oh, my page is 63.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is work that the agency was asked to do by LSO and has been doing since 2012 in regard to collecting data on teacher salaries, teacher migration, comparing us to other states and helping them determine the appropriate funding model, and also work to track Hathaway graduates. And we've been asked to continue that work. The staff in research and planning, their work is directly tied to a grant. So if we do extra work outside of that, there has to be a funding source. And that's what was identified as a funding source by LSO.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for I missed that note somewhere. And then you had mentioned earlier about when the two agencies were separate that there was no communications between what you were doing with Workforce Services and then with Department of Employment. Now you've merged, and it's indicated that it's getting better, but there's still work to be done. Is that our enterprise technology helping with that? Is that and how does that organization seem to fit with what your needs are?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hassert, so just to clarify, your question is about ETS's role? In
the you had indicated that there was still a little bit of technological issues between merging agencies and I just wondered if how we're working those out and is ETS working with that, and I guess I know that there was a lot of questions earlier how ETS was working with different agencies since this is kind of a new deal for us.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hassert, ETS is involved in every IT project, whether it be upgrading our phone system to a huge multi-million-dollar project like YCAN. There are processes in place where if it's over $200,000, we have to write a business case. We have to justify why we need it. We have to have project management, all of those kinds of things. And so, yeah, they're there. We transferred 11 positions to ETS, or 14 positions out of 21 to the ETS division. They've taken on roles that we used to have former staff in the agency to do, but they're directly involved in addressing our technology needs, if that answers your question.
Okay, and while we're on ETS, Joan, one of the things that when I look through the report from ETS relative to requests made by the different agencies and what ETS ultimately approved. Yours was one of the larger agencies that had a substantial reduction in what you asked for. So if you could provide me some of the information just in a report to this, what you asked for and where the cuts were made. I think it was almost $1 million, where he didn't agree with you on what you wanted, so I can have an idea of what's going on there.
Okay. Yes, sir.
And the other thing, too, and maybe Mr. Kocher had a question about how we get all of the different amounts in these checks. A couple of things, and maybe there's a better way of doing it rather than amounts. I mean, it's so hard to go in here, and I could probably ask questions about a lot of them, but we just don't have time to do that. And, Don, I don't know if there's a better way to do it by – well, certainly I don't think it's – we need to have down to the – the $25 areas, unless that's required by statute. Maybe there's a way to consolidate everything under $50 at one lump sum or something rather than having to put all those in there. And maybe that's something we should continue to do because it's something that's easily retrieved by you. And then the bigger ones, you know, like the participant services, you know, not so much the amount, but where it comes from and flows through. And maybe there's a better way of, like all of the colleges probably have to do with training. You know, maybe there's a better way to summarize this to, so it's easier for us to retrieve and ask questions and comment on rather than like, you know, some of the ones I marked, Snowy Range Consultant, LLC. I get very nervous about consultants. I have no idea what that's for, where it came from. L&H Industrial, that's probably a training program up in Gillette. And some of those things. So maybe we could work on that. Maybe a little bit better way to present that. And if there isn't, then we'll deal with this. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have some specific questions about some of them, or how would you like to proceed?
No, I think you nailed it there. Same thing. I mean, you circle these. I'm assuming it's training. You know, maybe you can put these into some kind of groups of training and maybe even separate it out by community. You know, I see some of these. I just have no idea. Just to let us know kind of what it looks like a little bit. Because it's so, you know, enormous. There's pages and pages and pages and pages of them.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask how other agencies present this information? I mean, is it in a different format or is it pulled differently?
Don.
Mr. Chairman, there are a few things that are different. The larger agencies, such as yours, usually have a cutoff. Depends on the agency, but the cutoff might be 2,500, 5,000, particularly the Department of Health. They also tend to do it by unit or division, so it's more easily identifiable whether these are training funds or unemployment insurance funds or quality child care funds to break that out by unit.
Maybe there's a better way we can work on that.
We can absolutely take that recommendation.
And under your 900 series, you have workers' comp claim, Nelson Medical Intelligence, $887,000. I'd be curious what that's for. You know,
Mr. Chairman, that's the back study that Dr. Nelson worked with the legislature to conduct, and we're reporting back to the Labor Committee on that, on back injuries and how they can be prevented to lower workers' comp costs.
CM Mitchell Consulting Corporation, 222. Is that, you know, some of those? Oliver Wynum, well, actuarial, I think I understand what that is. Anyway.
Well, they go, Mr. Chairman, they like right close to each other's Big O Tires and then Maurice's. I mean, similar amounts and just... So I think that's a good plan, if we can get them divided up, so we at least kind of know what unit they're in.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see the $800,000 back study when it's done, just out of curiosity.
Photographer in here.
Okay. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, there's a lot of tire companies in here. Is that for job training, or you guys actually buying tires that the motor pool would normally buy?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that could be an employer that's doing some kind of training for their employees. I have to look at it, but we don't actually buy tires.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right. Training, I guess. So. There's just a whole lot of stuff, and if it's not under a catch-all category, it's kind of interesting to try to figure out what it was for.
Dr. Wang. You know, maybe what we can do on this, Joan, too, is with Representative Burkhardt and Senator Hastert and Don, is figure out a way you two guys feel comfortable, just so there's a little bit better way of reporting it so we get the data we're looking for, and you don't have to spend a lot of time in doing it. Kind of cutoff, different way of doing it and presenting it to us. Okay? Okay, Committee, anything else? I have one other thing. Early on, you talked about the $75 million computer thing and how that's flowing through. Could you give submit some more information on that so we understand the start, finish, where we are, what it's going to go, costs. Okay?
Right. Right now?
No.
Oh.
Just provide it to us.
Okay.
Anything else? Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, Director Evans, the question I had to do with the number of employees from out of state that are coming into the state of Wyoming. Is it up to the person that's employing them to do background checks
to see if they've had fraudulent claims in other states for unemployment benefits or workman's comp claims that were fraudulent claims there? Or does your department do any background checks on that, unless you get a claim?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I'm trying to think how that would work. We do not do background checks on employees for employers. If someone filed a claim with us that had fraud in another state, would that be identified in UI? I think UI would catch it. I don't know about workers' comp. But that... Okay, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your patience and my brain back here. That CM Mitchell that you mentioned, that's an IT function where they run reports, Mr. Eisbart is telling me, on intrastate, interstate claim activity. And so fraud could be caught, but it wouldn't be caught till they filed a claim. I mean, we don't do anything on the front end and to tell an employer these are people that you should watch out for, so to speak. But if they filed a claim with us, we would know that it was a fraudulent claim, that they had committed fraud in another state. So it could be stopped at that point.
Follow up?
Well, then, if Mr. Chairman, I guess follow up. If someone, we don't have like a tips line or a whistleblower where someone could call in and say, this person is working in the state and I know that they've committed fraud in other states, and then at that point you would step in and...
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have a tips line on our website. There's a report fraud button, and I believe there's three ways. You can call, you can email, you can write. I mean, we want to know that, and then our special investigators will look into it. So, yes, if you're aware of that situation, we would want to know. But we also have ways internally, is what I'm saying. If someone committed fraud in another state, we should be able to pick that up in UI and workers' comp.
Anything else, committee? You know, Joan, one of the great things about Wyoming, and I was involved in a special session where workers' comp was broke, and it was a real mess and all kinds of things. Plus, the state of Wyoming was having a lot of issues with our jobs and revenues. It was a tough time, and we did a lot of things in that special session to put this back on track. And I think the really good thing that I see is these funds are solvent and we're providing the services we need. And so we're doing very well compared to where we were. And I think the other thing is in Wyoming, you know, a lot of states have the private sector and have combinations and all of that. This seems to really work for Wyoming. So that's a good thing for our state. Okay. It's now 12 o'clock. We'll be back here at 1 o'clock.